Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leader Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host today, Lenny the Fight Smith, Sanadol. Dude, I always mess up your last name. For some reason, I always want to say Sanadova. You know what I mean?
Sandoval.
Sandoval, man. I don't know why you look like a Sanadova to me, but Sandoval here with me on Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, we're going to have two guests come on through. We're going to have Daniel Roberts from The Deadspin. He's wrote, he's a hell of a writer. He's written other articles about boxing, but two of them have really caught a major buzz. And so I'd like to get him on, talk to him a little bit about those stories that involve yours truly, Floyd Mayweather. But we're going to have actor Mario Lopez. He's a big fight head, and he's also a host with Steve Kim, one of our colleagues here on Leaving Ring Network. He's going to be coming through, giving his drop and prediction and breakdown of the upcoming fight next week between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. So we're going to do a little bit of that. But hey, I'm going to patch in right now one of our writers, Brian Fogg, who was out this past week at the Doral and Jack fight. And here's the funny thing, man. Brian, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, hey, dude. Oh, it's you know what? It's Lenny's. Lenny has a lot of stack in the background in his phone. But hey, so let me just break this down really quick before we get we move on and stuff. Let me just kind of set the tone. So you went out for coverage for the PBC event for actually it was on Spike Channel, but it is still Al Heyman Entertainment. Right. So you went out to Chicago to do the coverage for Leaving the Ring, because surprisingly we got a credential for that, which was kind of weird. I really didn't think we were going to get that anyways. But so that's if you follow Leaving the Ring, you know why. But anyway, so you watch the fight and then you text me something really interesting, which I was kind of thrown back and saying, dude, you talk about having control and monopoly over the sport. If people out there still say, no, the comparisons to Hitler and all this other stuff you guys have been saying, you guys are way off. You tell me this is not some type of way of controlling media speech. They would not allow media in the locker rooms. They would only pass out at the end of the night a sheet of what fighters said, their quotes, to the media so they can report what those quotes would put on a piece of paper. That if that's not controlling what the media says to the mass audience out there, I don't know what is, Brian. Break it down, man. Yeah. How did you find out? What happened? You walked up to the locker room?
It was really odd. Usually at these fights in Chicago, at the UIC Pavilion, the writers have a lot of access. You can kind of bounce in and out of the locker rooms and kind of pull quotes whenever you need one. But this time it was different. We were told that we weren't allowed in the locker rooms, and that after every fight they'd bring us the quote of what the fighter said. It was odd, though. Part of me felt like, what am I really doing here if I'm not actually given the chance to cover the fight? I could just do what I did from my living room, really.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, though, because they're going to justify it. Well, you're going to – here's something. Most people that cover the boxing, they ask the repetitive questions was, did you feel you were losing? What was wrong? What did you think you did that was successful? There's really no meat and grind there. When I would cover the sport, I would go out there, and I really wouldn't actually go up to the fighter. I used to go and start talking to the camp and really try to get a feel of what happened, if whether they were the victor or the loser, and even talk to the promoter, because sometimes the promoter would actually give you some raw feelings of what happened if they were on the losing end. Here, by the way they did it with you, was really do the media's job. which is ask the repetitive questions. You know what I mean? They ask those repetitive. I'm sorry, man. I just got to put this out there, but that's just another way of a promoter telling his PRs that they don't even know, the media that are there covering it, they don't even know how to do their job. Just do their job for them and then give them the piece of paper. That's it.
Exactly. And, you know, on some level, I felt like they were looking for us all there to be their publicists instead of reporting. And a lot of the locker room access you get, you're finding leads for new stories. You're talking to the camps, the trainers. You're finding out what's going on in the sport that no one's talking about. The issues that no one's talking about. I found a lot of the stories I've worked on over the past couple of years just scrounging around through the locker rooms. And part of me understands, because a lot of the questions you get back there are, well, what made you want to win this fight? But at the same time, it disables the rest of us who are actually trying to do good work.
Yeah, they're really trying to find a needle in a haystack, and a lot of times that's where you find that needle, is by attending these events. I mean, I go to these events. If I go to an event, that's really what I'm looking for, is that needle in a haystack. I'm not really looking to talk to the victor or the loser, because you know what the answer normally is going to end up spewing out. But anyways, let me ask you this. How was the scenery other than that? Was there anything else that kind of stood out about the event? Give me a feel of what you saw out there.
The fights themselves weren't really all that great. And actually, they put the Polish fighters on after the televised card. And that's what a big part of the crowd in Chicago comes for. So the crowd during the Durrell-Jack fight, was kind of subdued. But at the same time, it was nice. It was a professionally done card. I'll admit that. I thought the scenery and the whole kind of whatever it is, the entrance they had was actually kind of cool. And it worked well with how the pavilion set up. But, you know, that's the thing. They do have a professional setup. And, you know, other than the fights being terrible, actually.
Right.
I mean, they were awful. Let's be honest here.
there goes your credential ever again, man, in Chicago.
Oh, man. Well, hey, apparently I'm just going for the free seat if I can't ask any questions. So,
yeah, I mean, that's pretty. I mean, if they ever complained about media only wanting to get free seats, because let's be honest, there's a lot of guys that go out there that all they want to tweet out is what they're wearing and who they're hanging out with. They'll really cover anything. Well, here's now the justifying point is that, well, there's nothing else we can really do because we can't report on anything. Fight fans.
Exactly. It's, you know, a lot of the media, they finally almost are getting what they want. They're not even expected to work now.
That's just crazy. Well, anyways, Brian Fogg, like always, great reporting from you, Don, out there at the beat. And a good article that you wrote, man, just this past weekend about fixing fights. That's a phenomenal article. I'll retweet it right now again. I don't know if, Lenny, have you had a chance to read that article that Brian put down?
No, you know what? I haven't. I had a big family thing yesterday. I've been trying to catch up. I just had to catch up on the heavyweight fight from last night, this morning. And the Ali fight, the Saddam Ali fight. So I got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, same thing here, man. All right, Brian, I'm going to let you go, brother. Thanks for calling
in. Hey, thanks for putting me through, guys.
Fight fans, you want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leave a Ring. Before we start breaking down this upcoming week in the mega, mega pay-per-view that's going to be on it's going to be hosted by what? Showtime and HBO? They're going to shake hands on. They did that with Tyson and Lennox Lewis, right? So
yeah, it's a co-promotion pay-per-view. So both, I think Showtime's going to get the top billing, but HBO gets, anytime you're going to hear Showtime, you're going to hear HBO mentioned at the same time.
$100, bro. How do you feel about that? $100 you got to dish out to watch this fight that should have been done 6 years ago. And could have been justified 6 years ago for $100. I don't know about now.
I think, I mean, quality of fight-wise, it's still probably one of the better quality fights that we can get. but thanks to our guest, Daniel Roberts, is writing on it. I think he kind of inspired me with that first article that he wrote on Mayweather. I'm not going to pay for any Mayweather fights on my own. I mean, and I've kind of tweeted and a little bit on Facebook, kind of told everybody that I know, if you like boxing, you're going to want to watch this fight. Try to spend as little money as possible. Go. Normally, I'm a big advocate for the sport, but for this fight, I just can't see. It's hard for me to justify putting more money in Mayweather's pockets.
Well, you know me, man. I'm a blue collar guy, and I do blue collar work, and I'm out working, and I always trail along. I end up bumping into other guys that are putting in work, and you know, and everyone that I've spoken to, I've all said the same. I don't want to watch this fight. Who really cares about this fight, you know? And these are guys that are really not boxing fans, you know? But the thing, too, is that most guys will say, well, if somebody's going to pay for it, I will go and watch it. Pretty much, Lenny, that's what I'm going to end up probably doing myself. I'm not going to pay for it, but I'll certainly go down to somebody else. I've been invited to maybe four or five different parties. I'll probably go to my compadre's house to watch the fight. It is on my birthday weekend, you know, that Cinco de Mayo is my birthday, so it tells you that I'm true Chicano over here. But, dude, I don't know, man. I'm just not pumped up about it. Let me pass in some fight fans here that are on hold, and we'll talk some boxing here. We'll talk about Klitschko and how he looked against Brian Jennings, and, of course, we'll be patching in about 3 minutes here. Daniel Roberts, man, and he's going to be talking to us here on Leave and Ring. Let's go with area code 724, you're on live right now in Leave and Ring. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening, guys.
All right, brother. Thank you, man. Thanks for listening. Let's go with area code. If I know this number very well, and I think I do. This is Rob Riller. What's up, brother? How you doing? How you feeling?
Yo, fuck Terrence Crawford now.
Oh, Terrence Crawford's your new bitch boy, huh?
Man, I threw a bite of my sandwich all that shit. I hope they don't click on me, but yeah. Yo, fuck that fight. I'm not paying for that shit. I'm broke. real talk.
real talk.
Not paying for that shit. Yo, if I was balling, yeah, I'd pay for that shit. It's an easy way to get bitches at your house. But I'm not gonna pay for that. I don't pay for fights, period. But I don't think it's gonna be as good as people think. The referee's already been announced. Judge has been announced. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather show. And sitting back, looking at the styles, I think Floyd Mayweather has the answers there for him to at least avoid Pacquiao for most of the round. Now, key word, I say most of the round, not most of the fight. Obviously, it's boxing, anything can happen. But I'm going to say for most of the round, he can avoid Pacquiao. He has the tools. He has the ref. He has the left hook push off. He has the clinches. Clearly ain't nobody going to be bitching at him like they were bitching at Klitschko last night. But, that's it. I don't know what you guys think. I don't know what you guys expect from the fight, but I don't really expect much. I expect typical Floyd Mayweather show and some bad judging.
I got to tell you this. If I wouldn't – because your voice is completely still gone, man. It hasn't came back. But if I didn't know any better, if you wouldn't have came on the show without cussing, I would have said this is not Rob Riddler here at all, man. But you gave it away with the cuss words in the beginning. But, hey, Rob, get better, bro. We're going to put you back on hold, man. Thanks for calling in.
All right, man, no problem.
Long-time listener, Rob Riddler. Hey, really quick, too, just a reminder, man. An OG for Leaving the Ring, Chris Herrera, had passed away this past week, man. And just want to say condolences to his family. And Chris Herrera, who did The Science of Violence when he had time, was with Leaving the Ring in the beginning. Rest in peace, my brother. I hope everything's better on the other side for you. I know it is. Really good guy. You will be missed. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598? I don't know about you, but I think Vladimir Klitschko is starting to show 39 age here, Lenny. I watched the fight. I thought, you know what? Brian Jennings did a great job in trying to nullify what he was trying to get in there. He was working at the body. But I just had this major sense, man, that he was getting a much older version of Vladimir Klitschko. The jab to me didn't seem to be there anymore. His right hand was being very reluctant. Did Jennings' movement kind of puzzle him a bit? Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little biased here, but I thought Klitschko would have figured him out a long time ago, later than late. Did Klitschko's Sanma coming in the play, I didn't think so at well at all. I thought that he did very well. He was able to keep some reserve. He was able to dish out when he needed to. And overall, I thought it was a shutout still, even with the older version that showed up on Saturday night, Lenny.
Yeah, I thought I don't know if Klitschko really is taking a step back. He's definitely showing his age, but I think he's managing his stamina a lot more. I think after the fight, he was asked about not throwing the right hand, and I mean, he didn't really throw it very much. He said that there weren't really opportunities. I think that there were, but I think when you throw those big right hands and you miss, it takes a lot out of you. And Klitschko in the past has had major issues with stamina for those fights that go into the later rounds. And I think he was kind of managing the fight like that. But I thought Jennings fought him about as well as anybody can fight him. I mean, the only way to beat Klitschko is either be bigger and stronger than him, which really hardly anybody is, or be kind of close to him in size and be able to be athletic and come at him from different angles like Jennings did. And, I mean, he did his best. He's just not good enough. I mean, I don't see any other American guys, and I'm talking about Deontay Wilder, doing as well against Klitschko as Jennings did.
Well, Al Haymon and Dante Wilder are obviously keeping a very close eye on that fight. And if any time they were going to step into the ring, right now would probably be the right time, which would be early next year. Just because of the fact that you could see that there is some aging there. You got to look. Okay. We're going to have Daniel Roberts on. I'm just going to throw my last thought out real quick, and we're going to have Daniel Roberts on right now because he is on hold. You got to remember, the guy's 39 years old. He can't be – he's not going to be able to reign it forever. He's an athlete, but he's got a wear and tear, man. I mean, let's be honest. There's some folks saying you can't make that excuse. But the truth is that it's not an excuse. It's a fact. But, hey, let's patch in Daniel here with us on Leaving the Ring. Daniel, you out there, brother?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Hey, it's been a minute. I've been wanting to get you on for some time, especially off your first article about Floyd Mayweather's breakdown of his domestic violence. I thought that was great. You put in so much work in it. It's true journalism that you did. So I'm just happy to be able to get you on this time around here, brother.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Really appreciate the chance to talk to you and your audience and appreciate all the great coverage you guys are giving. You guys know how rare that is in the boxing world today. So, just like to talk to people who have an opinion, who know the sport, and that's always a lot of fun for me.
You know, let me ask you this, because you're absolutely right. I don't get it. I don't understand why people just can't report what is really there in front of them, why they kind of just steer away from it, they go around it. And I don't know if you were listening a little earlier. One of our writers, Brian Fogg, was out at the Spike fight for Darrell and Jack, and they weren't allowed to the locker rooms. They had to wait outside, and then they were given a sheet of what the fighters said, and they had to report those quotes. What do you think about something like that? To me, I just kind of took it like that's their way of telling you, you guys don't even know how to do your job anyway, so we're going to do it for you.
I think it is, and it's consistent with the way kind of the Haymon TMT promotions group is just dealing with boxing journalists in general who don't toe the party line. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to make this like a big like political thing or anything, but I mean, it's the same thing you see in like, you know, politics now. You know, you've got, you got the Republicans on Fox News, you got the Democrats on MSNBC. And if you just want to go out there and tell it like it is, you're going to have a hard time getting the people to do it. Cause you know, the danger of a bad interview or getting some bad press seems to be just not worth it to people anymore. And it's unfortunate because I think we've seen more and more, some of the journalistic organizations out there, you know, unfortunately kind of buy into this trap and allow their people to play by those rules. And that's why we're not getting, you know, the right kind of boxing reporting from the mainstream outlets now, and why it's incumbent on people like you and hopefully people like me to kind of try to bring a perspective there that you don't get if you're doing saying what the promoters want you to say.
It's sad because you watch the guys that they do give the access, or I guess they give them the, what do you want to say, the shout out of when they're making a coverage. To me, it's, if you look at it, the overall is a circus. and those people that they're actually praising, that, and they always put out there the hardest working person in boxing. I don't see anything they report that is actual substance. It's more or less the ass kiss fest, right? And it's a clown suit,
right,
that they basically wear. And I'm like, do these guys not realize that they're being mocked? They're not really reporters. They're not even close to being a reporter. They're just the face of a clown in a circus. And that's kind of sad, man.
It is kind of sad, and I think they know that opinion's out there, and they don't care because, you know, it's working for them. And I mean, that is the way to get ahead right now, unfortunately. I mean, if you want to be, you know, if you want the backstage pass, you gotta play the game. And so I think the people who have gone that route have, by and large, chosen that path over reporting what they really feel. And there's some people out there. Look, man, I wrote a thing about Dan Rayfield, you know, a couple of years back now, and
right,
you know, look, I don't know Dan Rayfield personally, so I mean, I was writing about my experience as a fan reading Dan Rayfield. But my belief about Dan Rayfield is he doesn't set out to like mislead his audience. He's just not a curious guy, and he wants everyone to like him, so he won't really dig in there. And so the only people Rayfield goes after are people who don't matter, like the sanctioning bodies and judges who have like three fights who he never needs to talk to. I mean, those are easy targets that you can hold up and take a swing at without having to worry it's going to limit your access. But, you know, when you know, I'll, you know, you can throw out any number of guys, I mean, who he's kind of served as kind of a mouthpiece for. And, you know, you look at his reluctance to cover kind of, you know, the real story on Mayweather, and you look at, you know, like having Mosley on there after the Balco thing and letting Mosley kind of go out and use Rayfield as kind of an unquestioning platform. You know, I mean, those are two guys at different ends of the spectrum in terms of, you know, their affiliations and stuff. But, I mean, it's just pretty clear to me that he's a guy who wants to be liked by the people he works with. And so he doesn't – I just don't think people like that want to think bad things about the people where they work with. And that's just kind of the way they do business.
You know, I don't like saying bad things about people that I work with, too. But you know what? If it needs to be said, it's got to be said, right? If the guy's not holding up his end. I'm sorry, Lenny. What were you going to say?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a big fan. I retweet you all the time on the Twitter, and I'm a big fan of your article. It really opened my eyes a lot about stuff that I kind of knew. It kind of wasn't really put together in one place about Mayweather and his domestic violence past,
right,
because it really wasn't being talked about by the mainstream media. And up until the last couple of years, that was really all I was getting as far as boxing goes. But do you get a lot of pushback from inside boxing, like insider boxing sources that people like Dan Rayfield would normally have access to, because you start off with, hey, I'm Dan from Deadspin, or I'm the guy that wrote the in-depth Mayweather article about his domestic violence? Since you've kind of written those articles, have you gotten pushback from those insider sources?
You know, the honest-to-God truth is, you know, I really don't go looking for those people because, one, I'm just a boxing fan, man. You know, I'm not trying to hold myself out here like I'm an investigative reporter or anything like that. I'm not. I'm just a boxing fan. And I started writing really because I felt like there were storylines in the sport that weren't being covered the way they should, the way, you know, the great boxing journalists of years past would cover them. I mean, let's not forget that until recently, you know, being a boxing writer was kind of the highest calling within the world of sports. And all the great sports writers in the past did some of their best work on boxing. And it bummed me out, man, to see that the only people getting access these days were people who weren't doing that. And so that's really what drew me to it. And so the honest to God truth is, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, knock on Al Haymon's door and get a quote or anything like that. That's not really what I do. I'm just trying to like say, look, as a fan, you know, what is the information I'd like to have? What's the perspective I'd like to have? And I'll leave it to the guys who are doing that to kind of go in there and get that information. I mean, there are plenty of people I'm sure won't be happy to talk to me, but the truth is I've got no problem with anybody. You know, if Dan Rayfield wanted to sit down and tell me why I'm wrong about him tomorrow, I'd be more than happy to listen to him, but I don't think that conversation's going to happen. So, you know, that is what it is.
And it's crazy because that's when the best reporting does come along, when a fight fan that truly loves the sport and is willing to look into it without a biased agenda and just saying, hey, this is the lay down of it. and this is what it is. I'm not creating this. This is something that's already a fact. I'm just mentioning it and reporting it. That's pretty much why I started leaving the ring. But let me ask you this, mm-hmm. Daniel, because when I go after a story, or Lenny, or even my co-host who's not with us today, Gabriel Montoya, they go after a story. There's so much time and energy put into an investigational piece. Regardless of how you look at it, you got to look at this is an investigational piece. Your first article dropped about Floyd Mayweather's domestic violence. We had talked about that here on Leaving the Ring. But when you wrote mm-hmm. it down, you broke it down so – I mean, it was a puzzle that sometimes you would go, like, I'm not sure if that piece really fits. And you kind of just veer away from it and don't put the time in it. But you did. You put all the pieces together. How long did it take for you to put all the pieces together and say, hey, this is what it is?
So I probably spent about – so, I mean, the idea just kind of came to me. I was just – you know, obviously, I think all of us in boxing, we were aware that Floyd had this history. And what bothered me there was that every time I kind of looked on the internet for one story that really told it from start to finish – I couldn't find it. I couldn't find anyone who had ever told the story. And so finally I went to actually the Las Vegas courts website, and I just started pulling up the documents from the court case. And that's really what started it. And probably the process of doing that research and then finding everything else I could online, that probably took about a month. And then I kind of sent it in to the folks at Deadspin. And I had a bit of a different angle on it at the time. And, you know, it was probably, you know, in the editing cycle for maybe another month. But it came together, I mean, I feel like pretty big, pretty quickly for a story that, you know, that was that long and had that much information in it that had to be obviously verified and all that stuff. But,
What did the editor tell you? Let me ask you this. What did the editor of Deadspin, he's got to email you back, right? I mean, he read this and he's like, holy shit. Did he say anything to you about this article?
Well, you know, Tim Marchman, who's the editor-in-chief now at Deadspin, and was, I think he was deputy editor then was his title, managing editor. You know, he's a big fight fan, knows the sport really well. So like me, he knew about the history coming in. It was seeing all the details in one place that was really eye-opening. And that's what, you know, I don't believe was ever out there before. Our piece was kind of, okay, here's the true story of the last 15 years of what Floyd's done and said and been arrested for. And, you know, you could, again, I mean, when he went to jail in 2010, you know, everyone had a note about it. And, you know, Dan Rafael again wrote something about how, you know, Floyd Mayweather should sit in his jail cell thinking about how he could be fighting Manny Pacquiao instead. But no one ever bothered to go back and just see, you know, what are the details and what, you know, what's the history there. And then one guy who did some really great reporting on it was a guy named Martin Rogers for Yahoo and then USA Today. And Rochelle Carey, who's at Al Jazeera America, has done some great work on it too. But just in terms of getting all the details and putting it all together, I didn't see anyone who'd ever done that before us. And so I just thought, this is a great story, and Tim agreed, so we went with it.
Wow. Wow. Lenny,
given Floyd Mayweather's kind of his worldwide kind of appeal, he's a huge, huge star athlete, makes more money than anybody else and has for quite a while. I mean, besides just the Dan Rayfields of the world. You mentioned USA Today and Al Jazeera America, but do you have any guesses or any knowledge about why major news sources like USA Today or The Times or any of those haven't really jumped on this more or at least until recently?
Yeah, well, they certainly are now. And I mean, I think you saw, you know, Outside the Lines did a really amazing piece, I thought. And one person to give a ton of credit to is Rachel Nichols, who had Floyd on CNN right before the second Maidana fight. And she would not let the domestic violence issue drop. He wouldn't answer the questions.
Great interview, too.
And if you haven't,
mm-hmm.
Great interview. And he actually, you didn't see this on the telecast, but he actually walked off her set and then canceled the rest of his media appearances. He was so shook by the experience. You know, there are people out there who have done that. And so, I think that's terrific. I think, again, the fact is before, a lot of the sources were either local Las Vegas papers or blogs and stuff, and there wasn't a lot of reliable information in one place until we put it all together. And the fact is, you know, whether it was just good timing or whatever it was, I mean, that story definitely caught a lot of eyeballs, got a lot of attention. And, you know, you know, not a lot of people in the mainstream media admit it, but a lot of them do read Deadspin. And so I think a lot of people saw that article you know, said, this is something we need to look into. You know, I also think, it's not a coincidence that Floyd's popularity was probably about as big as it had ever been at when we ran our story, that it helped drive it too. I mean, back in 2010, you know, he was competing with Manny Pacquiao as the biggest star in the sport. He clearly pulled ahead of him by 2014 when we ran our story. You know, before that, when some of his first arrests came up, even if he was atop people's pound for pound, you know, Oscar, Shane, all those guys were bigger draws in the sport, and he was still kind of an emerging attraction. I mean, he was kind of the B-side against Arturo Gatti, even though everyone knew he was going to win that fight.
Right.
Because Gatti was such a bigger star. So it was kind of, you know, he had, you know, emerged now as the biggest star in sport, and we put this all together in one place, and it got it in front of the right people. And, I mean, I think the response since then has actually been tremendous to see, you know, Keith Olbermann coming out, you know, now talking about Mayweather, Sarah Spain, Michelle Beadle, the work she's done on the Fight Game about Mayweather and just on Twitter and some other outlets, I think has been terrific. You know, a lot of people have picked it up. I saw the New York Post just ran a story about it. You know, I saw Steve Kim just retweeted that, and I just saw it right before I dialed in with you. So, you know, it's catching on in the mainstream media now, and that's, you know, that's gratifying, obviously. And I mean, I guess part of my concern here is, I picked Floyd as a case study in how the media conveniently ignores inconvenient storylines. At the end of the day, Floyd's just a guy. Yeah, he's the biggest guy in sports right now. He's just one guy. There are a lot of people like this out there and who aren't getting covered, who have history like this or worse. And so I guess I don't want the story at the end of the day for everyone to kind of just grind Floyd into dirt. I want the story to be about, why do we have journalists who consistently look the other way when it suits their financial interests? Because that's really more my concern than a guy who's going to be retired from the sport in another year.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, some folks think that all we want to talk about is PDs and this and that, but we just question, why are these stories being picked up? Why are people ignoring this, that this is a major factor? There's a lot of things in boxing that are major factors that need to be looked at. Now, but really quick, with Floyd Mayweather, going back to him, now, obviously, the Mayweather fans, they defend him all the way down to the grave, man. I mean, they just sit there and they will argue their point of that none of this is true, you know. But the biggest one is right now your article with Stephen A. Smith. Give me a little bit about that. Why did you feel that, hey, I'm kind of compelled, I want to write about this, and I'm going to shoot this out there about another guy that seems to give Floyd Mayweather the pass?
Yeah. So Stephen A. was a bit more of a character in the original Mayweather piece, and in the editing, we kind of cut his role down a bit. And then right after our article ran, you know, there was the Ray Rice blow up, and Stephen A. made, you know, a really offensive comment about women being responsible for provoking domestic violence that got him ESPN for a while.
Right.
And so I've been kind of, I tweeted out a few times that, you know, Stephen A. had been, you know, kind of a consistent defender of Mayweather. He went, when Mayweather was arrested in 2010, he kind of went out of his way to say, there's kind of an excuse. He went out and basically accused Floyd's victim, the mother of three of his children, of making up the whole thing for money, with no evidence at all. So, you know, I think it was a story that needed to be told. And then, you know, earlier this month when he went after Kerry, or he didn't go after Kerry Champion. I mean, I don't want to say that, but I mean, when he told Kerry Champion that, you know, her opinion was only right because she was a woman and she was opposed to Mayweather, and that it was wrong for Manny Pacquiao to use that as motivation, and to bring that into the fight promotion, which, I mean, all of us who have been around the fight game for a while knows everyone brings their opponent's dirty laundry into the fight promotion. And Floyd did this against Chico, who was going to jail for beating the mother of his child.
Yeah, he dedicated that fight, remember?
Dedicated it to battered women, right? And then a month later, he was beating up one of the mothers of his children. So, you know, I felt like, you know, when Stephen A. tried to take on that point, especially in promoting, you know, a fight with this sort of attention, and while he's getting time on ABC to go promote Mayweather's car collection, like that's more relevant to the Mayweather story than his history of abuse.
Right.
You know, I just kind of thought now was the time to just unload. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, that was something literally the idea came to me in 10 minutes yesterday morning. I wrote it in the half hour. I just sent it off. I wasn't even sure if it was worth running. And I've been really surprised by the response. It's gotten a big response. And I think it just kind of speaks to the fact that a lot of people are sick of this kind of journalism, if you want to call it journalism, sick of this kind of PR masquerading as journalism. But, you know, let me just say this. I mean, I wrote something similar about Katie Couric 2 weeks ago and in the interview she gave Floyd. And, you know, that got a really good response, too. I mean, it's not just Stephen A. I mean, a lot of people are softballing Mayweather on these issues. And that's, you know, something we're just trying to, you know, make sure that, you know, the public doesn't go for that.
I agree, man. Lenny, you got any last questions for Daniel here, brother?
You know, I was going to ask him about the Katie Couric thing, but you answered it before I could ask it, so I appreciate it, man. Again, the names of the articles on Deadspin, the first one that really kind of started up the firestorm is The Trouble with Floyd Mayweather, and then the more recent ones have also dealt with Mayweather, the way it was handled by Katie Couric, and What the Fuck is Wrong with Stephen A. Smith. I love the title of that article, man.
I didn't come up with that title.
I didn't come up with the title. All credit to the editors over there. But it's a question on everyone's mind right now, I think. I really appreciate you guys having me on, man. It was great to talk to you guys about this stuff.
Hey, thanks, man, too. And just keep it up. Keep grinding out there, bro, and putting out the truth. I appreciate you coming on, leaving the ring. It's much appreciated.
My pleasure. Take it easy, guys.
Daniel Roberts from Deadspin just came on right now, talked about his recent article, What the F is Wrong with Stephen A. Smith, and talked about his past article about Floyd Mayweather, given the breakdown of Floyd Mayweather's past domestic violence. I think right now, Lenny, is we got our next guest with us. I'm going to double check really quick here. Let me see. Mario Lopez, are you there on the line, brother?
Yes, sir. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Hey, thanks for coming through, man. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
So I heard you're just getting off the plane, right? That's what's going on with you, man? So I know that you're on a busy, busy schedule.
Yeah, I'm on – I just got back from Houston and got to go home, get ready real quick, and head over to the Daytime Emmys. Crazy day.
Man. Well, here we go. Mario Lopez here on Leaving the Ring Radio. He's also doing a podcast with my colleague and friend Steve Kim, and he's taking some time out of his busy schedule here to talk boxing on Leaving the Ring. So, Mario, really quick, let me ask you, the big talk is always, it should have happened 6 years ago, man, but it's happening now here this next week on the Cinco de Mayo weekend. Who do you got, and why are you making that pick?
Well, yes, it should have happened 6 years ago, I think. The result perhaps could have been different than this weekend. With that said, it's hard for me not to be biased because I'm a wild card boxing club guy. Been there for years. I remember the day when Manny arrived, and he is just such a great individual outside of the ring, and just such a cool person and down to earth. And Freddie, too, who I'm happy to call a friend, so clearly a lot of bias on my end, and I'm pulling for those guys and really want them, obviously, to come away with the victory. I mean, I think even with all the time and that's gone by and Mayweather taking the time thinking that Pacquiao's slipped and has it doesn't lost a few miles off his fastball there, I still feel his hand speed, his foot speed, the angles, the southpaw stance, the work rate, all that is very difficult to prepare for. And I feel Pacquiao is going to steal some rounds and end up winning this thing. And I know I'm in the minority, but I really do believe it.
You know what? Let me ask you this. What do you think? Isn't it kind of crazy that Manny Pacquiao was the guy that was labeled the Mexicutioner, right? But, you know, when you're out there, and I'm talking to several casual fans, hardcore boxing Mexicano fans, and I'll go like, so who are you going for, though? Me voy con Manny Pacquiao, cabrón. Me voy con Manny Pacquiao. How the table is turned, because before, the Mexicanos wanted Manny to get dropped and beaten by a Mexican, but now it's on the other hand. Do you think that's kind of weird?
Well, I mean, Manny couldn't help who were the champions at the time. And you had Marco Antonio Barrera, of course, and then Eric Morales and Juan Manuel Marquez and all these guys who, in their own right, are just Hall of Fame amazing fighters and warriors. And those were just the guys in his weight class. And but the thing
right.
is, even those fighters themselves, and I was there when Eric Morales even visited too, those fighters still respect him. He represents everything Mexicanos love, too. He's humble.
Right.
He's a modest guy. He doesn't forget where he came from. He comes to fight. He's an offensive machine. He goes for the knockout. That's everything that Latinos love and represent. So they respect that. And he's one of those fighters that are not just respected but beloved, and especially in the Latino community, because that's what they're
Absolutely.
All about. Much like Triple G, much like Golovkin, he's the same way. Modest, humble guy. And comes and tries to knock you out. And so that's why he's got a huge popularity with Latinos, too.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he does, definitely.
I think so. I think there's definitely a kinship, too, a kindred relationship between Mexicans and Filipinos, especially, like, in Southern California. I know I'm also Mexican. We're, like, an all-Mexican cast today. There's like a feeling that the Filipino people, at least in Southern California, are like the Mexicans of the Asian community. So there's definitely a bond there.
Well, and at the same time, I think Mayweather represents all the things that Latinos get turned off by. The arrogant
right.
and the irony in him running his mouth and not fighting like it. It's all the entertainment stuff once he gets in the ring. You know, you can't argue with it. You can't argue he's effective, but doesn't make him entertaining. And I've been to many fights where people start booing. I'm sure you guys know that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely. But let me ask you this just really quick. Talking about being humble and what Latinos love and embrace, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was just in the ring this past week, 2 weeks ago, lost, was dropped, and quit. What are your thoughts about that, man, being Mexican-American? What do you think about a guy that supposedly was supposed to represent his dad, but also the Mexicans?
Well, I mean, like most guys my age, grew up loving his dad. I have a poster
right.
of him and with Taylor, the fight poster, in my office hung. And I always liked the kid because I just the nostalgia and him being – I remember when he used to walk in the ring with his dad and a little red headband around and – so I was always pulling for him, I should say.
Right.
And I know he was lazy, and I know he kind of came across as entitled, but he always came to fight, and he always was in entertaining fights, and he was a tough kid. And he had showed a good chin and a nice hook to the body, just like his dad. Obviously didn't have the skill set Pops did, but he was tough, and he managed to win a championship. Now, this last fight he had, I mean, talk about biting off more than you can chew. I don't know what he was thinking. Just taking on, especially after the layoff, an opponent as dangerous as Fonfara and a naturally bigger guy. At that first round, I go, oh, my God. Not only did he look bigger, as soon as he started throwing those punches, you can just tell just by the sound of the punches and the way he was reacting to them, it was not going to end well. And
right.
I was just disappointed on that he chose him as an opponent. His father felt the same way. And listen, again, he fought bravely, but just was outgunned in every sense of the word, and no business being in that ring with that man that night.
No business with him at all. Len, you got one last question for Mario here before we let him go, brother?
Yeah, really quick, just jump back on the Manny and Wildcard thing. So you've seen Manny in the gym at Wildcard. Do you think him training in L.A. is going to be better for him for this fight than the last kind of handful of fights where he's been training in the Philippines?
Well, the last couple of fights, I think geographically the Philippines was closer to Macau, right? So I think that probably behooved him. But being that LA is so close to Vegas, I think he's less distracted than he is in the Philippines, believe it or not, even though he rolled deep with like a 30-40 versus entourage. But his entourage, by the way, which is different than like Mayweather's. And Mayweather's, all those guys are on the payroll. And
right.
Manny's entourage, it's like they're all his homies. It's like the guys he used to sell cigarettes with on the street and like these crews that follow him. And you could just tell those guys like love him, like would do anything for him. And he's good to them. So I like that he's he was at Wild Card and was able to get the sparring that they were able to get. And He looked good in sparring. I saw him in sparring, and he looked good. He looked good in this camp. So, I mean, I think he's ready.
I got one last question for you, Marv, before I let you go. Floyd Mayweather has been tweeting out, throwing it on Instagram. He's got Alex Ariza, Memo Heredia. What are your thoughts, and do you think that bringing those guys in was either him being a little concerned in his training camp and how he prepares for a fight, or was this just a mind game to go in the head and the mind of Manny Pacquiao? What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, obviously, that's going to come with some level of controversy, and there's going to be whispers of suspicions and rumors going around about Floyd paying off doping agencies and what have you. I mean, it's not a good look, but it is what it is. And say what you will about Mayweather, but the guy's always prepared and looks in phenomenal shape, and some question whether that's a little engineered and you know, be that as it may, he's been able to do what he needs to do to be in the best shape possible. So I don't think anything gets into the head of Pacquiao, but I don't know if it's a language barrier. He just doesn't care. But that guy, I think it's sort of irrelevant trying to play head games with him. And
right.
Freddie Roach, too, he's having fun kind of talking all this trash, and he's been the mouthy one. But he does it in jest. It's all he's just trying to sell tickets.
There you go. Mario Lopez here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, bro, thank you again for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring and the rest of our audience. Have a good Sunday, brother.
Thanks, man. You too. Take care, guys.
There you go, fight fans. Mario Lopez came through. Daniel Roberts here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host here, Mr. Lenny, the Fightsmith. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Hey, Lenny, so let's break down Klitschko here, and then we're going to break down Mayweather and Pacquiao. Klitschko, what did he look like to you? Did he look like the old of Klitschko, or did he look like the old Klitschko?
I think, like I said earlier, He's definitely shown his age a bit. He still looks good. He's still strong. He's still stronger than everybody else. He's bigger than everybody else. His footwork is as good as it was when he was with Emmanuel Stewart. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart was still around. But he's conserving his energy, and you can kind of see that from the beginning of the fight on. I think that's going to happen. He'll probably be around and stay at the top of the division. I don't see him losing to anybody. I don't think there's anybody out there that can beat him in the next kind of year or two. Maybe as he continues to age and as some of these younger guys start getting more experience, like Joshua or maybe Tyson Fury, I can see one of those guys coming up and maybe taking the belts from him, but not for at least a year or two.
I don't know, man. I think right now what I saw, a guy that was look, watching him, you got to, if you have an imaginary pound-for-pound list that some folks like to use, you got to put Klitschko up there. He's definitely one of the top three that is a reigning champ that uses everything that he has available and uses it well. It may be only one or two, three certain punches that identify him, but the way he identifies those punches have really stood out. The jab alone has been one of his shooting missiles to blast on an opponent's face, and it was missing this Saturday night, bro. It didn't seem like the same thump behind it. Didn't have the same energy. It didn't have that same, I'm going to rip through your guard and catch your face so I can sneak in my straight right. I just saw a lot of missing, and if I was Dante Wilder and anybody else like Tyson Fury, I would definitely be banging on the door of getting a shot at Vladimir Klitschko right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bigger story of the fight was Jennings, though. I mean, last night I didn't see the fight last night, but I saw everybody on Twitter, and everybody was giving the fight to Klitschko, like landslide decision. He won almost every round, but. Everybody was also giving Jennings respect, and when I saw that, I'm like, I don't really get it. How's a guy going to get that much respect if he's losing every round? And then watching the fight, you can see, I mean, he wasn't getting dominated in any round. He was just kind of not winning his rounds because he was having trouble with Klitschko's length, and Klitschko was able to hold him when he needed to and didn't really let him get off any good shots. But I thought Jennings fought a hell of a fight, especially – I mean, they were ranting and raving about how new he is to the fight game, but I mean, he looked like a pretty experienced fighter when he was in there. When I watch some of these other guys, when I watch Fury and when I watch Wilder, they don't, I mean, especially Wilder, fundamentally Wilder is terrible. His footwork is bad.
Right.
He throws two punches at a time at most. But Jennings is in there. He's a little unorthodox, but he's, I mean, his footwork was good. He was kind of placing his punches right. He was attacking the body, which is really the only thing you can do against Klitschko. He just wasn't able to do enough.
Well, this is what I saw with Jennings. And, yeah, you got to give him his credit, which was he was in the fight, okay? But, again, I think that a lot of fighters, especially American fighters, they're having trouble trying to find the range to hit a much bigger, taller guy. It was there. The one thing that I didn't see him try to take advantage of when he should have is that lazy jab that Vladimir Klitschko was throwing, okay? They should have caught onto that right away. To me, they stuck to this plan, which was try to get into the pocket, work that body, which was having some major success. It was readying up. It was readying the body of Klitschko, but they didn't catch everything else. They didn't catch that Klitschko was really not on the gas pedal when he was supposed to be. He was really taking his time to rest in there. If you're looking to push to find out if Klitschko could get fatigue, they obviously did it in Brandon's camp. They did it in spurts rather than being continuous through the whole second and minute in every round. And it also questioned me, had my question was how well-conditioned was Brian Jennings himself? I don't know, you know, but hey, everybody's going to have their kind of way of looking at that fight. I think that Klitschko right now is there for the taking. Brian Jennings shouldn't have his head down. I'd like to see him get back in there because he did a valiant, valiant fight trying to take out the much bigger Russian, Vladimir Klitschko. But, hey, let's move on to we had talked a little bit about Julio Cesar Chavez, bro. I got to ask you, I saw what you tweeted and stuff. So let's break it down. What do you think, man? I mean, do you give this kid a pass and hope that he wakes up and comes back and even tries a bit better and harder? Or is this are we just done with this guy, you know? Should we just say, that's enough, don't let him get back? Okay, you're done. Hey.
I'm done. You know what, no, I was a supporter, and you know, like, it was funny the way Mario kind of approached it, because given my love for his dad, I mean, his dad is probably the biggest, as far as a boxer goes, the biggest reason I'm a boxing fan today. When I was a kid watching his dad fight with my dad and with my dad's friends was always a treat for me, you know? So I wanted to like him. I wanted him to be good. And he did fine when he was fighting smaller guys. When he was coming into the fight 25, 30 pounds heavier than the other guy, he was beating them, knocking guys out, and knocking some solid guys out. But, I mean, this and also, normally I'm not a guy that's going to jump on a guy that quits in the ring for the right reasons. I mean, some guys need to quit earlier than they do, especially when you see things like that Mike Perez Mago fight where those guys were just going at it and battling, and this guy, he'd rather go out in the field, and you see what happens. But with this last fight last week with Chavez Jr., it was just he bitched out. He got hit hard and he went down, but he wasn't out of it. I doubt that one punch severely concussed him. He was feeling the power. He wasn't going to win. He just didn't want to go out there anymore. He just didn't want it.
Dude,
he didn't want to do it anymore.
All that was left for him to say was no mas. And that would have I bet you Roberto Duran was sitting somewhere going, say it, bro. Say it so that I could finally just leave me. You know, nobody would use it as a reference, no mas and my name behind it. It would now trail on to Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. How bad, though, do you feel, though, for his dad, man, that's really got to hold his faith? Because I got to tell you this, Lenny, you're Mexicano, I'm Mexican, too. And I got to be honest, man, Mexican parents are brutally honest. You know that Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. told him, like, híjole la chingada, güey, no sirves por nada, man. What was wrong with you, bro? You know, you really left me hanging. You really just put my name in the dirt, man. I can't believe that he cuddled the kid and told him, hey, you did your best. I just feel he went in on the kid when no cameras were out there watching, bro.
Oh, I think as soon as they got home, he pulled off the sandal that with the made of the tire on the bottom, the hard rubber sandal, and just beat his ass with it. I'm sure he did.
There was no menudo for him on Sunday. Let's just say that, man. My man, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Talking boxing here for about another 30 minutes here with Lenny the Fight Smith. Hey, so let's move on, man. Let's talk about the big one. The one that everybody's been waiting for 6 years. It's finally going to happen at the MGM in Las Vegas, Nevada. Floyd Mayweather, Money May, and against Manny Pacquiao, the Pac-Man. Who wins this one? We had Mara Lopez on just a little short while. If you didn't catch the interview, don't worry about it. It'll be on the archives. He has Manny Pacquiao winning. Lenny, who do you got winning and why, bro?
I think when the fight first got announced or when they first said the talks were getting close, I think I tweeted out that Mayweather was going to win by a landslide decision. I think he's going to win like at least 7 or 8 rounds. It wouldn't surprise me if he won 10 or 11 rounds. He's bigger and stronger, especially now that he's working with Memo and Ariza. He's going to come in to the fight probably, I think he's going to come in about 7 or 8 pounds heavier than Manny Pacquiao and use that weight. And Manny Pacquiao is pretty wide open to that straight right. He hasn't really done anything in the last few fights to show that he can avoid that throughout the fight. So I think Mayweather's going to tag him in bits and pieces and just win rounds. I think it'll be an okay fight to watch for the average fight fan. I think for the more learned fight fan, I think you'll be able to appreciate the nuances of these two fighters because they're both insanely skilled. But unless Manny Pacquiao can land something huge early in the first couple rounds, I think it's going to get away from him.
Well, here's the thing about landing something huge is he hasn't hurt anybody really majorly at 147. He's banged them up, but nothing that really stands out where you could say he's got the possibility of knocking out Floyd Mayweather. I think he could wear him down and he could beat him up, but knocking him out, I just don't see that happening at all. I mean, Floyd's got a good chin. You got to remember, when he got caught with a big puncher like Sugar Shane Mosley, he was rocked, who was able to catch his bearings and correct his mistake. That's the one thing that Manny's got to remember in this fight here, is that once he capitalized on something and he's not able to capitalize majorly, like getting a TKO over Floyd, he's got to jump on something automatically different. He's got to change up whatever got him lucky into that shot with Floyd, because Floyd's a master of figuring out how he got caught and how to fix himself so that flaw was no longer existing. It is a door he would definitely close if he lets you in. Now, if you've been following me for a very long time, you remember that I started on YouTube, and I broke off a video of how the certain things that Floyd does that is so visible and fighters are not really looking at. One is that Floyd, he likes to bend at the waist when you throw a punch. And that's normally your big money punch. He'll bend at the waist and dip down where he kind of loses eye contact with his opponent. Now, if Manny could do some feints and catch Floyd when he comes up to peekaboo to see where you're at, there's a strong possibility he can land some big, big, big shots on Floyd Mayweather. Here's the other thing, is if he could turn Floyd when Floyd is using the shoulder roll, because if that one thing about that shoulder roll, you got to be in the same position to use it as a defense, because it also allows the opponent to rush in and smother his own punches, and that's why you see the punches kind of go over and behind the head of Floyd. So he's got to turn Floyd, and if you don't believe me, watch Chop Chop Corley. He did that to Floyd Mayweather in their fight. Watch Zab Judah. He did the same thing. So there are some things that Floyd still does a lot that nobody really capitalizes on. So that to me there is going to be, I think, a key part of what Manny Pacquiao can do against Floyd Mayweather. Man, I apologize, the static in the background. Here's the thing, you know, I'm not really sure who I got yet, man. I'm still on the fence, you know. I mean, I got to tell you the truth, Lenny, is I would want to see Manny win this fight. But the thing to me is that if him and Freddie have not corrected the fact that he gets tagged a lot by right hands, it's going to be a right hand fest on Manny's face. It's going to be he's got a catcher's mitt face, you know, because going back to Chris Algieria and even Timothy Bradley, dude, he was getting caught a lot with right hands, and they just made no adjustment. There was not even a minor adjustment to get away from the right hands, and Floyd's big money punch is that right hand. We've seen it. Once he zero ins on it, and he lands it once and twice, and at ease, he starts to double and triple it, Lenny. I mean, I just can't see anything if they don't do something about that.
Yeah, he throws that – Floyd throws that straight right almost like a jab because he doesn't jab a lot. He throws that straight right so much because he can get it from that kind of cocked position to a full punch probably faster than anybody, even now, even in his later this late in his career. He can still just get that out there so fast. I just have a feeling that it's going to land enough on Manny's face to win almost every round. That's kind of, that straight right is going to be the difference. As far as Mayweather or Manny being able to hurt him, Mayweather's very rarely hit solid on the face, on the chin.
That's true.
And when he is,
yeah.
I mean, I think the last time he was really, really hit, well, Vidana in the first fight got him a couple times and stung him, and then that Mosley fight, that second, I think it was the second round in the Mosley fight, and where his knees buckled. And if Manny Pacquiao can land something clean from that kind of awkward southpaw position with a good left on his chin, I don't know what could happen. I mean, yeah, Manny doesn't have the muscle and the strength that he's had before for whatever reasons. I'm sure Paulie Malignaggi has his theories. But I think that given Floyd's chin issues in the past, there's a chance that he could do something crazy.
I think a lot of folks are hoping for that. I mean, I definitely am. I mean, if we want to see some drama and not just a Floyd Mayweather show, I'd like to see something like that happen. Let me ask you this, man. Mentioned a little while earlier, I had mentioned about Memo Heredia and Alex Ariza involved in Floyd Mayweather's camp. Really, to me, when I see something, there's two things, and I've gotten a lot of emails about this on our Leaving the Ring Gmail account. People ask me, what do you think? I said, listen, there's two things that I have thoughts about this. One is that if he's really, truly using Alex Ariza and Memo Heredia, because this can be all a tactic to get into the head of Manny Pacquiao, if he's really using this, there is a such thing as too much information, and especially in one of the biggest fights in his career, one of the biggest fights that he honestly didn't want, man. I got to say this again. He did not want this fight. This was forced on him. Who else was he going to fight? Showtime was looking to get their money back and the payout of what they've done for the kid, right? So if these two guys were pulled in, there is a such thing as too much information in being downloaded. That can majorly affect him. But I don't know, Lenny. I just can't picture him really taking the advice right now in such a fight that has so much on the line and trying to add something new to the camp when everything else has basically worked for him. He showed that with the second fight with Madonna, because the first one, everybody was questioning about his legs, and he had said, hey, I'm getting hit because I want to get hit, which I don't believe. But he came back out. Conditioning was better. He took Madonna a lot more serious. And guess what? It was an easy, easy win for him on that rematch. What do you think about this, bro?
I think he's – up until the first Maidana fight, I don't think I've ever seen Floyd Mayweather have a conditioning or an issue with any of that stuff. He came into fights at the pretty close to the weight he walked around at. Since that first Maidana fight, I feel like – I don't know if it's just me kind of buying into the Mayweather hype, but I feel like he's got a lifestyle change or something, and he's looked bigger, just bigger than he normally does for whatever reasons. And bringing in these other guys, I don't know if that's related to it or if it's compensation for it or what, but he's changing up that side of his game, the conditioning aspect of his game, and I really don't know why – and what the result is going to be. I guess we'll see it on Saturday. We'll see what he looks like in the ring and see if he looks good in the later rounds, if he's still fresh in the later rounds, or if he starts to tire in later rounds with the extra muscle that he's putting on. But I don't get it. I don't really get bringing those guys in.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And here's the other thing I don't get is that the random blood testing, nobody's really covering that. Nobody's really asking questions. What I've been told by other people that are on the beat in the media, that if you start questioning anything, then you're automatically going to be shunned. You're not going to be able to get back into a PBC event, Al Heyman Entertainment event. And that's what a lot of folks are afraid of. So it leaves you out there with the story. I'll tell you what, the story's going to be big. If there was some type of drug use in this fight, if there was some type of shadiness in this fight, the story will be broken 10 years from now. Somebody will definitely start stepping up and start talking about it. But right now at the moment, the biggest fight that people are considering in the world, nobody's going to talk about it except for Yours Truly here on Leaving the Ring. We're the only ones that are really going to be mentioning it. But it is what it is. I find it really funky that Floyd is bringing on two guys. One of them very much is very questionable. They did a documentary on the guy. He even said it's very easy to cheat the test, a drug test. Real easy to get certain drugs and make mixtures. Hasn't done any, and none of his fighters have done drug testing. Alex Riza has been majorly questioned. He was fired from the Oxnard training camp. Robert Garcia, but the, you know, their thing was that, you know, it was a miss. You know, they just felt they didn't need each other anymore, which was really truly BS. We all kind of know why what happened there. But that's, I think that's what's one of the bigger stories there between Floyd Mayweather. Now, who's my pick, man? I'm going to tell you, my heart tells me, my heart's asses for Manny Pacquiao to win this fight. My head, though, which I always listen to, is Floyd Mayweather wins this fight to a decision. I don't see him banging with Manny. I see him making Manny missing a lot of shots, frustrating Manny to the point because the right hand is going to land and because he's not going to really be willing to trade with Manny Pacquiao. So I got Floyd Mayweather by a unanimous decision. And then it ends all of that. And hopefully the zombies, because I think we're in an apocalypse now for the past couple years, which what I mean by that, these casual fans and these other media whores that keep coming out, I call them zombies because they keep infecting everybody. The cure finally happens and they all disappear here, Lenny. And we go back to regular talk of boxing and real coverage for the sport of boxing. But I doubt it, bro. I really, really do. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Lenny, the Fight Smith. Follow him on Twitter here on Leave the Ring. Wish you guys all a good night. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Lenny, thanks for coming on and covering for Gabriel Montoya, brother.
It's been fun, man.